We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now, New Galaxy Enterprises proudly presents Inalienable and Free, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. We begin our program with remembering a short but significant moment when the brave presidential First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt extended her hand to help the magnificent diva Marian Anderson.
In 1939, the African-American singer Marian Anderson was denied permission to perform in Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. by the Daughters of the American Revolution. Eleanor, whose family had fought in the Revolution, belonged to the DAR. In protest, she resigned her membership.
By then, she had the self-confidence and the strength to stand alone, because she knew in the depths of her soul that this was wrong.
Eleanor worked quietly behind the scenes. She helped arrange for Anderson to sing at the Lincoln Memorial.
75,000 mass before Lincoln Memorial to hear Marian Anderson, colored contralto, make her capital debut at the Great Emancipator Shrine.
If you had a longing to create an original book, screenplay, or other media project, but neither had the time nor expertise to do it, I'm Johnny Bluestar, and I founded New Galaxy Enterprises to help ambitious, busy, but highly creative people fulfill their goals to create poignant media projects. If you need help to accomplish your goals, visit newgalaxyenterprises.com or contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. Turn your vision into a dazzling media reality. Manifest your media dream today. Today's program will take a concerted look at our immigration policies. I am happy to discuss this topic with my co-host, Hugo Rodier, MD, who is now hosting his own program, Integrative Hermetic Health. Dr. Rodier not only has a passion for health issues of his patients and those needing vital health information, but has a dedicated concern for the political well-being of the citizens of planet Earth. Let me now welcome my co-host. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this will be a very interesting show. You know, I don't know if you've been listening too much to this, but there's been lots of establishment and alternative media discussing these tweets that Donald sent recently to the world through his favorite methodology of Twitter. As Inalienable and Free is a program with a universal spiritual perspective, one clearly inspired by the thoughts of the Founding Fathers, many of which were Masons, I think we should make a few comments of the spiritual foundations of immigration policies and practices. For instance, Doctor, the Declaration of Independence says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Seems to me that has some kind of implication for immigration policies. What do you think?
Absolutely. And you said it best when at the beginning you mentioned that this is a very complex issue. And through my physician medical training, I see so many parallels to the pursuit of happiness. It turns out to be 85% health, to the way people deal with complex issues. They tend to focus on the leaves of the problems, the roots are ignored. So like in medicine, we end up treating symptoms without focusing on the root issues. So this whole immigration policy, we end up talking about things that just won't do any good because we're not addressing the root. So we end up hating each other, arguing with each other. Both sides have good points to make, but who puts them together? And that's a very core principle of integrative hermetic health, in trying to listen to all sides and see if we can come to the table and discuss the root issues instead of getting hang up on the leaves, the consequences, the symptoms, if you will. We see it everywhere in politics and medicine, any field of endeavor, even in relationships. when we start fighting with our spouses or friends, it tends to be over peripheral issues, but never, or seldom, I should say, about the root of the friction between two people. And so I look forward to trying to get at the core of the problem.
Yes, I think that there are certain actually spiritual foundations, like I mentioned, to handling things in government. And I think that paying attention to these words, which we will do shortly, will be very, very important in understanding what could be a sane immigration policy. But before we get into the sane ones, we need to see what's really been happening here. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be right back. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. My company, under the direction of our technical director, Hassan Khan, specializes in the development of user-friendly WordPress sites. These may be used in manifold ways to promote products and services, to become a platform, a forum for your ideas, or your special interests or fascinations, or to enhance your personal image. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
Chapter 3. Ahmed opened his eyes to complete blackness.
Am I alive?
Panicking, he put his hand in front of his face and he couldn't see it. He moved his fingers. Still nothing. Ahmed's frantic eyes moved back and forth and there was not a sliver of light.
I'm blind, he thought.
A sudden surge of adrenaline compelled him to action. His brain sent a signal to stand up, and as he did, the pain shot from his feet to his head like a hammer hit on a high striker in a carnival. Gravity pulled his broken body to his knees, and he collapsed. He felt his body. No clothing.
What happened? Am I dead?
No, he thought.
I must be alive.
He was in too much pain to be dead. He felt his chest for bullet wounds, but found none. Except for some tender spots on his chest and back and some scrapes on his knees, there was nothing.
They must have used rubber bullets.
Ahmed strained to see, but it was no use. He felt his face. It was swollen and bruised.
They must have blinded me in the shooting, he thought.
As his other four senses came to life, he realized that he was sore all over. He tried to stand again, but his legs would not cooperate. He felt them with his new eyes. The bones felt straight and unbroken.
Must be sprains, but why am I blind?
He struggled to control the panic and the terror.
Think. Think. Have to think.
Ahmed crawled on his hands and knees and propped himself up against the wall, which was as cold and damp as the floor. He felt along the walled boundaries of his confinement.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. About 7 feet in one direction. 1, 2, 3, 4. About 5 feet in the other direction.
Next, he negotiated the circumference on his hands and knees. How did he get himself into this mess? From his cozy home in Santa Barbara, to the battered and occupied Baghdad, to this. His brother Sabine needed his help, so he went. It was as simple as that. The next events were a blur to him. The raid, his capture. Now he was in some kind of military prison. Since his capture, Ahmed had been stripped naked, cavity searched, shaved, bald, beaten, kicked, and spat on. And then the mock execution. It made his current confinement in this dark cage somewhat of a relief, not at all what it was designed for. The walls were as cold as a headstone. He felt around them until he came to a steel door. He thought of his wife, Catherine. She must know he was missing by now. But even if he was to be rescued, what good is a blind husband? An accountant by trade, there was no way he could work with figures as a blind man. He would be a complete burden on the entire family. The best thing to do is to kill myself, he thought. He had some life insurance, and wondered if it would pay off in the event of his suicide. The time passed, but Ahmed had no way of measuring it. How long have I been like this? Ahmed concentrated on his other senses, but there was no input save the sound of the pounding of his own heart. His mouth was as dry as a slab of jerky, so he tried to wet his broken lips with his tongue. In despair, he dropped to the floor. Lying there on his back, he rubbed his eyes, and suddenly, he saw tiny stars above him in the blackness. Light! I can see light! The tiny stars spread out in a geometric pattern like symbols in a matrix. This can't be stars. They're not random. Ahmed's accountant's brain analyzed the patterns of light, but then they turned into eyes, angrily staring at him. Stop! Stop! Please! Somebody help me! Then the eyes pulled back to reveal a miniature firing squad with their rifles trained on Ahmed. He heard the blast of the rifles, almost in slow motion, and felt the bullets ripping through his flesh as his brain switched off.
And now Patricia Welch in Fly Me to the Moon.
Welcome back. We're going to discuss the immigration policies and services and attitudes. But I want to start out with looking at what happened before 9/11. Just let's trace a little, let's talk a little bit about the history and about how maybe it impacted on us. I'm the, my family is, I guess, maybe four generations from other countries at most, except for my current wife is partly American Indian. So, but before that, my generation is from, you know, my generational family is from Poland and Russia and Romania. How about yours, Doctor?
Well, I turned out to be a first-generation immigrant. I immigrated to the United States as a student in high school and to live with Americans. So I'm not quite a first-generation immigrant, if you will. So I tried real hard to become an American with that family in Idaho. And so I didn't view myself as coming as a child with parents, so yeah. I was pretty much cocooned in an American home at that age, and so I immigrated legally, and then got my citizenship in my 20s.
Where did you immigrate from?
From Chile. My name is French. My father was a Frenchman in Chile, married a Chilean Basque woman, my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I already came with a high degree of international flavor, if you will. I'm trilingual. I feel like a citizen of the world. So these immigration issues, I've been contemplating these issues for my whole life, if you will.
Well, in my case, my family, my grandfather on my father's side and my grandfather on my mother's side, they both came over because of very grave anti-Semitic things that were happening. And one was in Russia, and that was where they actually had these pogroms, and they were in a small town in southern Russia. And I think that one of my grandfather's sons, not my grandfather, got kicked in the head by a horse, by someone in the Tsar's army, and I think that was some kind of an incident, and it spurred them, okay, it's time to leave. And then my Romanian father, grandfather, he just basically hated the way Jews were treated in Romania, and he was kind of adopted by, I believe, a French legionnaire, and his name is actually French. It was Klepper, and he came over, and He hated Romania so much he wouldn't even speak the language. So he was quite fluent in English, whereas his brother, who also came over, was the head of the Romanian society in New York. So they were. But my grandfather was very, very happy to be here. I can tell you both of them were. And my grandmother, unfortunately, one grandmother had been come from Russia before that. Her family had come there. But the other one came because of the Holocaust in Poland. And a lot of people died. I hear 10 people of mine died in the Warsaw Ghetto and many in concentration camps. So that wasn't such a nice way to get here, but they did get here, and they were all very successful.
So I wonder if your Russian grandparents, did they know Tavia? I'm just joking, you know, the Fiddler on the Roof, it's a movie about your people.
I'm sure they did, because one of my uncle was in charge of advertising for all the Broadway shows and so forth. So I'm sure we all knew about that. In terms of my own sort of spiritual development, I was very widely interested in all types of religions, and I basically have developed a kind of universal perspective. And, you know, so it's interesting to see how we evolve, right? And
right.
But we both owe a lot to American immigration, don't we?
We sure do.
The thing is, if you go back in history, you find that
we had, you know, the colonists. We're always talking about the colonists who come here as immigrants. But a lot of colonists came here as slaves, right? I mean, a lot of immigrants came here as slaves, right?
So, yes. Have you read Thomas Friedman's last book, Thanks for Being Late? It's a terrific book. He's written other books like The World is Flat and From Beirut to Jerusalem. Very good writer. But I always felt that he wasn't quite getting it until he wrote this last book, where he makes two huge statements. One, that technology will help us, but it is so devoid of wisdom, it may become a problem. And before that, he was very gung-ho about technology. And statement number two is that America cannot continue to be great unless it honors its immigrant roots and foster legal immigration that will continue to benefit our country.
Well, I know that the heads of the various tech companies have been very upset with this travel ban because they know how much they need that fresh, technologically oriented blood to come over here and help them. And some of the greatest achievements, of course, have always been made by immigrants. And somehow things have changed. But I want to point out, I want to go a little bit further into the history. So we start out with the colonists and, you know, the people who basically were involved in the revolution and the slaves. And really, we're talking about white propertied slave owners and people who they at least have to have property, not because of the federal government, but because of the state policies, as I understand it. And this progressed, but a lot of minorities were kept out. And, you know, slowly different minorities came in and often were persecuted. And some nationals, like the Japanese, were allowed to become, you know, citizens way later. You know, it was like slowly we began to accept everybody. And so we built our suffrage up to, you know, and women, of course, in terms of suffrage, in terms of people who could come here. It came to a point where we really had a great achievement, right? Before 9/11.
Yeah, a great book on all that is The People's History of the United States by Zinn, which used to be a cult book. Now it's mainstream taught at universities where they deal more with the last point you made, that is that the disenfranchised have had a problem with immigration. One might say they still do.
Yeah. Well, right now, the entire concept of immigration and what has changed. Now, naturally, if we believe in national sovereignty, and we do, we know that although all men are created equal, there is a limitation to how many people can fit into one small part of the world, even with fairly large sovereign nations like India, China, or ours, or the United States. We all have certain types of population problems even now, especially, you know, in certain cities and so forth where there's a very high concentration of people, and other places fairly low. But generally speaking, there is a population problem that we have to deal with to some extent. What would be the best type of policies that would align with the concept of equal justice for all in our selection processes?
Well, in my opinion, a country has the right to put a limit on immigration, of course, that's given. But a country needs to look at its needs and the needs of the United States to have labor that to fill jobs that most Americans don't want. It's amazingly obvious, meaning we need people to immigrate and take certain jobs. So I think if we were to take a page from immigration to, say, Saudi Arabia, which I think is very problematic, but they do get something right. They do allow workers to come in. Of course, they're treated poorly, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, Saudi Arabia and those countries made a decision to allow workers to come in legally to benefit from that labor. Now, if we were to take that and apply it to the United States, we could say, okay, we need 40 million people to come in, or 20 or 10, whatever. You come in legally, you sign these papers, you get legal work. If in 10, 20 years, whatever, you prove yourself, you have a path to citizenship. But if you screw up, if you so much pee on the sidewalk, you're out of here. I mean, then everybody wins. So we have the Democrats and the Republicans satisfied if we were to look at this compromise, in my opinion.
I think that's very important. You know, I think it's a contextual thing. We need, first of all, we need what you'd call maybe sort of lower level wage earners. We want people who can come here and do a lot of different things that maybe Americans don't want to do generally. But whether they want to or not, the businesses here really feel that they need them and they use them, whether they're legal or not. And of course, it's getting a little harder for them, but it's still something that many people believe that, these companies have encouraged illegal immigration because they needed to use the workers. So that's not a good thing. It would be better, like you say, that they're legal. But we also need high-tech people. And we also have to have compassion for refugees and people who are political refugees and crisis refugees who are fleeing the countries because of tsunamis or whatever, volcanoes, whatever, or terrible hurricanes, of course. So the thing is, it's a big context. It's not just one group of people, but it's a whole bunch of different categories of people, and we need to be fair, and we also need to be fair to ourselves. We need to be self-serving, but we also need to be compassionate. So we need to have a balance. That would be what I think.
Exactly. I totally agree.
You know, we're now faced with an interesting moment because in the great, what I would call the great saga of Trump's immigration policies, giving news commentators across the world another opportunity to analyze its twists and turns and try and decipher again where Trump is coming from. Let's listen to a very lucid report a few days ago following Trump's retweets from a rather strange source. Mike Barnicle from Morning Joe introduces the problems, followed up. With a fascinating report on Piers Morgan's response to the tweets by host Joe Scarborough. Let's play that.
President Trump has been busy this morning on social media, retweeting in quick succession a series of alarming videos. The first showed a video which allegedly depicts a Muslim migrant attacking a Dutch boy on crutches. That's what the text says anyway. The second tweet contains a video that purports to show a Muslim man destroying a statue of the Virgin Mary. And the third claims to show an alleged Islamist mob pushing a teenage boy off a roof and then beating him to death. All three videos were originally posted to Twitter by Jada Franson. She is the deputy leader of the far-right ultra-nationalist group Britain First. She was found guilty last year of religiously aggravated harassment of a Muslim woman. Britain First says it wants to ban Islam from the UK and fiercely opposes mass immigration. Piers Morgan chimed in, tweeting to President Trump, "What the hell are you doing retweeting a bunch of unverified videos by Britain First, a bunch of disgustingly racist far-right extremists? Please stop this madness and undo your retweets."
By the way, for just a little context on the Piers Morgan tweet, first of all, he's had a pretty positive relationship with the President of the United States. Secondly, he's sort of like his morning show over there is the sensation. And he is, again, just very plugged in over there. But again, has come under fire there and here sometimes for being
too defensive
of Donald Trump. But here he's saying, you know, these are crazy. And people, Willie, that know who this woman is basically say, you know, she's a white supremacist. And this fits in, again, with all the disturbing conduct we were talking about in the first 2 hours.
There's such a volume of tweets from the president. We can't lose our ability to be shocked. And this is the retweeting by the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, to 44 million people, which will be amplified even more on media, of videos that have not been verified. We don't know who those people are, what's happening in the videos, really. Of a woman who, as you say, is effectively a white supremacist who wants the religion of Islam banned from the UK. Again, that's President Trump, president of the United States, amplifying that voice to the world.
Following the tweets, Vice News managed to have an interview. A clip which follows a bit of Jada Franson's making an anti-Islamic, anti-immigration sweet pitch. Let's listen to the interview.
I'm the deputy leader of Britain First. We're a patriotic political party. I post a number of videos on my Twitter and Facebook platforms every single day. Quite simply, I believe President Donald Trump has very graciously shown his support for my plight here in the UK.
This is Great Britain. We don't stand for those values in our country.
One of the videos Trump shared was misrepresented as an attack by a migrant. Tweeting directly at Trump today, the Dutch embassy responded, confirming that the attacker was not a migrant and that facts matter.
Well, I think the point is that President Trump has retweeted a number of my videos, my content, which highlight the dangers and issues of mass Muslim immigration, which is something that Donald Trump himself
has pointed out. Do you know that boy's a migrant?
We can talk about the specifics of videos all day long.
But if it's not real, then it could be fake news.
The point here is, the news story here is that the leader of the free world has just expressed his support for an individual who, I'm an elected deputy leader of a British political party, and I am being sent to jail for giving a speech which the establishment have quoted as being anti-Islamic.
You've been very vocal about migrants that have come to Europe, alleging that they have come over here and they are sexually harassing and raping white women.
They are.
So how do you then respond to being retweeted by a president who has said things like grab him by the pussy and has been accused of sexual harassment by over...
He'd
also been accused by over a dozen people of also carrying out sexual harassment.
Accusations are not convictions.
And also he hasn't condemned, for example, Roy Moore, who's also been accused of sexual abuse.
I always find it interesting when people try to water down what is, quite frankly, an epidemic of Islamic sex attacks, Muslim grooming gangs that I have myself confronted here in Britain.
Franson's referring to groups made up of mainly British Pakistani men, sexually abusing young girls. Some people think those cases have been swept under the rug, but they've made national headlines in the UK, and scores of men have been convicted.
What we're dealing with in this country is an epidemic, and it is absolutely ridiculous to try and draw a comparison to a comment that the president made in a private conversation. Shame on you for trying to stoop so low.
Actually, I think majority of the people. Are you afraid of the questions? I don't know.
I'm not afraid.
So why don't we continue? Do you not see the issue that is if you just say Muslims and say that an entire group of people, do you not want to answer the questions?
What do you think of that conversation, Hugo, with that interview?
Well, it's disgusting. It's just amazing how people can get these terrible ideas in their head and defend them when they don't have a leg to stand on. Speaking of this woman.
Yeah, I mean, she got herself in a lot of, she got a lot of response to what she's been doing in England. And we're going to take a break now for a couple of minutes to come back to this and discuss this and some more of the implications about the tweets, the retweets from this interesting lady. So now we'll go to a next break. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. One of our highly useful services is our audio and video editing service, overseen by Hassan Khan, our Director of Technical Services. We can also help edit and write the original content for your video and even produce it, depending on its content and direction.
To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Dr. Hugo Rodier is a medical doctor trained in nutritional medicine with a special interest in intestinal disorders. You may schedule a consult via Skype or telephone by calling 801-898-3317 or via email by accessing his website, hugorodier.com, hugorodier.com. No insurance accepted, but a form is available to apply for reimbursement from your insurance, except for Medicare. Dr. Rodier speaks English, French, and Spanish. Here's a remarkable song by Zave Nathan and Bonnie Blazak called Change. You know, it's really interesting. You know, that song is, it's just very impactful. We want to have change, but somehow we're stuck in changing backwards these days. I don't know. Getting back to that lady, Jada Franson, the Parliament of England was quite concerned. I heard a debate about that having to do with possibly how to impact Trump to realize that he's done a very, very terrible thing to the English government. That's what they think anyway. I kind of get that point too. Let's turn to actually what happened when Prime Minister of England, Theresa May, responded to these tweets. That's very interesting, and we'll continue the discussion in a minute or two.
The fact that we work together does not mean that we're afraid to say when we think the United States have got it wrong, and to be very clear with them, and I'm very clear that retweeting from Britain First was the wrong thing to do.
Prime Minister, would you sack one of your own cabinet ministers if they retweeted right-wing propaganda like Britain First?
I have absolute confidence that my cabinet ministers would not be retweeting material from Britain First. I have to say, just for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not a prolific tweeter myself, as you may have seen, and that means I don't spend all my time looking at other people's tweets, but when I feel that there should be a response, I give it, and I've given it to President Trump's tweets.
Separate to these tweets, in general, do you think the US president is a supporter and enabler of far-right groups?
I think that we must all take seriously the threat that far-right groups pose, and both in terms of the terrorist threat that is posed by those groups and the necessity of dealing with extremist material, which is far-right as well. I've commented in the past on issues in the United States on this matter. In the United Kingdom, we take the far-right very seriously, and that's why we ensure that we deal with these threats and this extremism wherever it comes and whatever its source.
Well, Hugo, did you hear what she said? I mean, what do you think?
Well, it's just amazing how Trump is messing with other nations' affairs. The Brits are totally correct in condemning how a foreign president is interfering with their issues. And it's not the first time. Remember when Trump sort of let out the cat out of the bag when they were after the attacks in Great Britain?
Mayor of London, right?
Yeah, that too. The British police was after the trail of these guys, and Trump and other people made known to the press how that investigation was proceeding. The Brits didn't want that. They don't want to tip what they're doing to the opposition.
Oh, okay. And then he said something because he misunderstood something that was said about people being careful about guns. He was talking about actually the police, that he wasn't even talking about the terrorists, and this caused a lot of confusion.
Right.
He was just trying to tell people that the police were taking care of things. It got distorted.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, and I think it's quite dangerous. I mean, some of these things that are coming out, and we're not going to talk about other aspects of the foreign policy today, but some of the comments that are made by Trump about North Korea and calling people names and things of that sort, getting down right down there on their level, is not exactly probably the route to diplomatic solutions. Anyway, let's hear how Sarah Sanders, whose boss has so long charged the press with fake news, is putting out a barrage, who is now putting out a barrage of fake news himself.
Whether it's a real video, the threat is real, and that is what the president is talking about. That's what the president is focused on, is dealing with those real threats. And those are real no matter how you look at it.
So it's okay if it's a fake video?
Look, I'm not talking about the nature of the video. I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. The threat is real. And that's what the president is talking about, is the need for national security, the need for military spending. And those are very real things. There's nothing fake about that.
Hugo?
Well, it's just absolutely childish, you know, how she defends the concept but not the vehicle. And I get it. You know, we're talking about a threat from Islam, from radical Islam, not all Islam. And I get that point, but to totally ignore the nature of the video, it's just embarrassing. You know, Trump supporters have a, a total right, a justified right to strike back when our country's attacked and all that. But we never get at the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that we have no business being in the Middle East interfering with their issues, with their sovereignty. So they strike back, and we don't seem to like it when they strike back. So we demonize the whole culture in striking back. And so there we go. It's just snowballing, and we are hating each other and dealing with peripheral issues with the leaves of the problem. And we don't deal with the real issue. We have no business being there.
Let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning of this, of Trump's attempt to deal with immigration. Let's go back to his, because it's a fascinating sequence of events. Trump weaves in and out of his point of view on Muslims and Muslim countries, as we'll see shortly. And here's the initial campaign discussion of a proposed travel ban against Muslims.
Shall I read you the statement? Yeah. Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice. Mr. Trump stated, without looking at the various polling data, it's obvious to anybody the hatred is beyond comprehension of such a big portion. Where the hatred comes from and why, we'll have to determine. We're going to have to figure it out. We have to figure it out. We can't live like this. It's going to get worse and worse. You're going to have more World Trade Centers. It's going to get worse and worse, folks. We can be politically correct and we can be stupid, but it's going to get worse and worse. Folks, those days are over. Those days are over. We have to be tough. We have to be smart. We have to be vigilant. Yes, we have to look at mosques and we have to respect mosques. But yes, we have to look at mosques. We have no choice. We have to see what's happening, because something is happening in there. Man, there's anger. There's anger. And we have to know about it. We can't be these people that are sitting back like in the World Trade Center, like so many different things. We can't be people that knew what was going on 2 weeks ago in California. Probably for months they knew what was going on, and they didn't want to tell anybody. We can't be that. We have to be strong. When we see violations, you have to report those violations, and quickly. You don't worry about profiling. I promise I will defend you from profiling. I promise.
So it's quite interesting how the travel, the Islamic ban was handled by the courts, and it sort of morphed into a travel ban against certain Muslim countries. Here, RT reports on what was then a new travel ban.
Donald Trump has signed a new executive order that imposes travel restrictions for citizens from six Muslim-majority countries. This comes after the first version was blocked by a federal judge in Seattle. Artis Ganichichkan reports from Washington.
President Trump has dropped Iraq from the new travel ban list, which now includes Sudan, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. The citizens of these six countries will not be able to obtain U.S. visas for the next 90 days. Iraq was reportedly dropped following pressure from the Pentagon and State Department, which had urged the White House to reconsider, given Iraqi forces' role in fighting ISIL inside their own country and given the U.S. support of the Iraqi forces. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson indicated as much.
Iraq is an important ally in the fight to defeat ISIS. This intense review over the past month identified multiple security measures that the State Department and the government of Iraq will be implementing to achieve our shared objective of preventing those with criminal or terroristic intent from reaching the United States.
The implementation of Trump's previous travel ban order was challenged by U.S. courts and faced a huge backlash as visa holders from seven predominantly Muslim nations, including Iraq, found themselves stuck at airports. President Trump said he ordered the ban to protect the country from terrorists who could arrive here as visitors or refugees. The White House said the governments of the countries on the list were unstable and could not provide proper background checks. To many, that defied the concept of refugees, because how many refugees come from stable governments? According to the new directive, however, the Trump administration plans to cap the number of refugees it accepts at 50,000 a year, down from the 110,000 the Obama administration accepted. Narrowing the scope of the travel ban to exclude Iraq seems to be a compromise that the White House made, given the U.S. support of the Iraqi forces. What implications the new executive order will actually have on national security is very much unclear.
Hugo?
Yes, I think it's total discrimination. And Trump tells you himself campaigning that he's going to defend people and stand up for people who profile other people.
Well, what I see is that these recent tweets, they go back right back to the beginning of it. You know, in other words, he did soften things. He's done business now very successfully with some Muslim countries. And it's very strange to see what Muslim countries he's doing so well with, considering the following information about the travel ban, which ABC explores in the following audio.
We asked our Brian Ross to go back to 9/11, to the Boston bombings, to San Bernardino, asking where did those terrorists come from? And if there's going to be a ban in this country, why weren't those countries included? Here's our chief investigative correspondent, Brian Ross.
President Trump's ban somehow misses the very countries that have produced the terrorists responsible for the deadliest U.S. attacks. None of those killers came from any of the seven countries on his list: Libya, Sudan, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, and Somalia. The 9/11 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Lebanon, and the United Arab Emirates. None of them on the list. The wife in the San Bernardino terror couple came from Pakistan, not on the list. The husband, American-born. The Boston bombing brothers came from the Russian Republic of Dagestan, also not on the list. David Muir asked the president about the missing countries last week.
Let me ask you about some of the countries that won't be on the list. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia.
You're going to see. We're going to have extreme vetting in all cases. And I mean extreme. And we're not letting people in if we think there's even a little chance of some problem.
The White House today said other countries could be added if necessary.
It's a 90-day review period. And if you've got other countries, please let us know.
Refugees from Somalia, which is on the list, were involved in two terror attacks last year at a Minnesota mall and at Ohio State University. But in each case, only the attacker died. The president's supporters also point to how the Obama administration drastically curtailed the flow of refugees from Iraq for 6 months in 2011. That came after the FBI discovered two Iraqi refugees connected to Al-Qaeda had made it into the U.S. and were plotting attacks from their new home in Kentucky.
And Brian Ross is right here with us tonight. And Brian, back to that question we asked the president just last week. Why were countries like Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, and Pakistan not included on this ban?
Well, David, there's still been no cogent answer from the White House, but we do know the military believes the seven countries on the list are among the places ISIS fighters fleeing the battlefield may try to hide. And as the press secretary said, if you know more, let us know.
Well, that's kind of interesting. None of these countries have really had people at the moment doing harm to us. Yet the countries that may have been most promoting and funding terrorism are seemingly becoming our friends. So what is that all about?
Well, it's all about profiling, that letting prejudices and preconceived conceptions guide your actions. So they're just not going to be right. And so there's going to be a lot of room for error. And so if we were just to focus on the real problem, it'd be so much easier. But I just don't hear anybody talking about it. Look, we're an imperialistic country that's invaded a lot of countries. We have military troops in over 200 countries. What do you expect? These people are going to fight back. So as long as we're interfering in their affairs, they're going to strike back. And so this will go on and on and on until we look at our imperialistic policies, interfering with other countries and trying to monopolize their commerce to have the mighty dollar control their affairs and that benefit big banks and corporations. This is what's going to happen.
We have to, it's just a shame that the sort of the conscience that's embodied in our founding fathers' thoughts, now not maybe that well in their actions, are not being followed. Now, what we were talking about before is that our immigration policies after, the founding fathers initiated our country and after the Civil War, we had a great deal of expansion of equal rights. And it moved on to the point of 9/11, and then we are now cascading backwards with what we're doing. And we're basically letting a certain group of people control this country because of things that most countries, most modern democracies think is kind of backwards thinking, which is basically hating different groups and punishing them, which is really what's happening here.
Well, yeah, because when we are at war, we demonize the enemy. You know, you and I are Cold War children. I grew up with the Cold War. I never agreed with it. So I took Russian in college. And so I could understand the other side's viewpoint. And I'm not going to say they are totally right, but we're not totally right either. We are at war with a lot of Muslim people. And so people that don't know better out of ignorance demonize the whole culture, all the countries. So that's why we get into these predicaments. And so on the one hand, I see the point that Trump and his supporters are trying to make. We need to defend ourselves. Okay, well, if you truly want to defend yourselves, get out of those countries and stop oppressing so many of these other people. That how would we feel if somebody was trying to interfering in our affairs? Well, we know the answer to that. We don't like Russia interfering with our election, but do we ever stop to think that we have been interfering with every other country's elections?
Of course. I mean, that is just, yes, we have. And it all boils down to one thing. It's a money issue. I mean,
exactly.
It's a war machine making a lot of money. So actually,
exactly,
you have to look beyond the mask of the Muslim, six Muslim countries or the Muslim band, and you have to look into what really is happening. It's like we were promised a certain amount of equity for the middle class and, you know, jobs and everything. But what was really happening with this last legislation that's passed the Senate is really quite different than what people really thought was going on. And yeah, the Republicans are not really listening to the Democrats, and they've managed to get something through. I don't know if it'll go all the way through, but it's pretty frightening that so much money is being taken from our social benefits on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and so forth, and given to the very rich and the rich corporations and billionaires. It's all happening again. And the people who are following our current administration, who think it's really great, are really ignoring what's happening to them, because they're becoming treated like these people that, like a certain ethnicity too. The blue-collar white workers are going to be mistreated even if we get more jobs, because of the taxation on them and the problems with their health care and everything else.
You're absolutely right. It's all about money. And that's why we've invaded these other countries. It's about money. It's an oligarchy. We no longer have a democracy. It's an oligarchy of moneyed people that want to perpetuate their riches and their control. And so who suffers? Well, it's all about gun or butter. So we choose guns. There's more money in it. And butter, well, all the social programs go unattended.
Well, I think it's kind of sad to see what's happening. And you have a gigantic amount of people and legislators who are really basically bought and sold by their donors. And you can't really, I mean, even the so-called maverick John McCain backed this bill. And so you really wonder, we really need to rethink who should be in control of this country. But if people don't take up the plate, pretty soon it'll be so difficult to do anything.
John Adams said it best. If you don't know how your money is run, you're not free. We're not free. The money's being run by the oligarchy.
So...
Yes, you know, what I see a lot in people that are involved in money, trading, banks, they think they're so smart because they made money. When what they've really been doing is speculating, creating smoke and mirrors to play with our money, the money we've made, the money my mom used to make by scrubbing toilets at a college dormitory. Those are the real workers that create real wealth. And then these speculators that sit behind a desk and make phone calls to create programs or tools, they call them, to play with the money, which doesn't work. But they're convinced that they're so smart about that. And then after they have some relative success robbing us, they think themselves wiser and more intelligent and more deserving because they have more of that money they created by cheating.
Well, you know, to sum up, because we're going to take our final, we're going to progress to the end of the show now, it all comes down to the idea that all men are created equal. And what you have is a battle of people who think that they are not equal, that they are superior because of their money, because of their ethnicity, because of their connections, because of their achievements in terms of business. All these different factors enter into basically the destruction of the American principles that founded our country and that maybe weren't practiced very well, but were developing quite nicely until 9/11. So
I would go back further back. I think this whole unraveling, we had a hint of it with Teddy Roosevelt, and then it peaked with Eisenhower, and then when JFK was killed, I think it was all downhill fast.
Yes, well, I think that's true too, and that's where you see. But nonetheless, it wasn't so blatant. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the legislation that supported it wasn't so blatant, and we did not have massive surveillance without warrants back then, and we didn't have torture, at least in the forefront, supported and actualized by our leaders. It was more or less something that happened behind the scenes. But now all that violence and all that anger and all that. That elitism is right on the surface.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
So we're going to conclude this show with a few messages. Inalienable and Free is a call to action that enjoins its listeners to take an active part in the electoral process. As citizens of a sovereign nation, we need to retake basic freedoms and inalienable rights back from a government controlled by special interests that work against their citizens and the rights and privileges they deserve. We who are fortunate to live in democracy should work to eliminate government policies that suppress the rights of freedom of speech, assembly, the right to a fair and speedy trial, the right to an attorney, the right to habeas corpus, and so many other rights, including the right to health, happiness, environmental, and personal safety.
If you like this program's point of view, we invite you to contribute to this program. And if you are a company that creates good things for humanity, we'd love you to join us as a sponsor. Here's something that we all need, as presented in this beautiful song by Patty Greer, May Peace Prevail on Earth.
May peace prevail on earth, and let the children sing. May peace be in our homes, a love that's very true. It all starts with me and you.
Thank you for joining us on Inalienable and Free. Although the Jefferson quote we heard from President Kennedy at the beginning of the program is from the American Declaration of Independence, no one can deny that these words are meant to apply to all men and women on the planet. Indeed, we need that all nations should become a beacon of light by reflecting the principles put forward not only by our founding fathers, but by many great men from all nations, traditions, political, and social movements. To this end, we enjoin our listeners to amass all their strength, integrity, and idealism to create a government truly of the people, for the people, and by the people. If all men are created equal, then all men deserve justice for all, no matter where we are on this planet. Join us again on Inalienable and Free, informing, enlightening, and empowering our listeners to take action that will make true equality a reality for all.